Butcher?
What happened?
My wife. She's alive. Vought's holding her captive somewhere. And right now, we're in a little bit of trouble.
Are you fucking with us?
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of NerdTube. I am Bo Oliver, your host, joined today by Aaron, the NerdTube Monkey, and Marissa, and we are back to review The Boys Season 2, Episodes 1 through 3. Threw us for a loop here, releasing the first three episodes, but it turned out to be a pretty good decision, because these first three really feel like the first movie in a trilogy. So we're going to dive into each episode and everything that happened with all our favorite characters, The Boys, The Seven, Gus Fring. All the boys are here. And yeah, I guess I'll start with your general thoughts for both of you. So how have you liked The Boys Season 2 so far? We'll start with Marissa.
The Boys Season 2 has really given me a lot to chew on so far. There are things I really like about it and things that kind of hit me the wrong way. I guess we'll talk about that later. But overall, I've enjoyed it. Like, the first three episodes, like you said, really do feel complete. It's like the first arc in the story.
Yeah, everything's almost like set up for the rest of the way for the remaining five episodes. And I said it on the episode one review, it kind of just brought you right back into this world with all these characters that we've grown to either love or hate in the first season. And it really does feel like a continuation, a natural continuation of the story in season one.
Yeah, and it's a very much a piece of art that's of its time, because when it came out in 2006, we're obviously in the middle of two wars. There's a debate between religious persecution and nationalism and how these things can be harmful. And they're really dealing with those themes from that decade, from the aughts. But they are also updating it to the modern day, to 2020. So I think when you mentioned that some of these things hit you wrong, it feels like things that would have been more acceptable 15 to 20 years ago.
Also, in general, just things that in our current moment, there are things they couldn't have known while they were filming this season were going to be happening right now. And right. That's just not something you can necessarily account for. And so there are things, like you said, that are a little bit outdated, but also things that just in this, you know, current moment, how can you account for protests happening in Portland right now and a character named Stormfront who's a racist from Portland?
White supremacist straight out of Portland. Well, that is a spoiler. We'll cut that out and we'll say spoilers for the character of Stormfront.
Well, it's a spoiler discussion.
Well, no, but this isn't something that's necessarily been confirmed. It's something that's still, I mean, there are hints of what this character actually is.
Yeah.
But if you Google her name, you'll get some clear insight into the inspiration for this character. But yes, like you said, they didn't know that they were, it also goes to the scene when Huey's going to pick up Purell for mother's milk. They didn't know that Purell would be so important.
Yeah, that Purell moment, I was like, oh, sounds familiar.
That's essential. Right, yeah. Where the fuck are you going? Bring back the Purell. That's been 2020.
Yeah, pretty much.
Don't leave the house and come back with Purell. Right, yeah, but we'll get into everything that happened over these three episodes. But where do you guys want to start? You want to start with any character, any moment? We could start at the end of episode three, pretty big ending. Or, you know what, let's start with Homelander.
I just want to say, every time Homelander is on screen, I'm uncomfortable. Like, the tension is unreal. Every moment with his kid, like, I was going crazy.
That whole scene, I guess we'll just skip to the roof scene, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he takes throwing your kid in the pool to learn how to swim to a whole different level with this. Throws a kid off the roof to learn how to fly. The whole time, he's going to push his kid off the fucking roof.
Birds do it.
yeah, and Homelander is the American Eagle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, no, that whole uneasy is the perfect way to put it. The tension becomes palpable because he's just such a wild card.
Yeah.
And I think they've done an even better job of making him sympathetic, but you are never rooting for him because he's so despicable. But he is so emotionally broken. His emotional intelligence is non-existent. And the kid is great.
Yeah.
You really felt the fear in that kid's performance.
Well, he's such a great villain. And just this whole dynamic with him, his kid, and Becca, him being in that house and her, first of all, she's already in a type of like pseudo prison in this enclosed area, and now she's a prisoner in her own home with Homelander there. And just like the, like, you could tell in both of them, like, her performance, just what this guy is doing to her, just his presence alone. And you assume, like, all her life with her child has been trying to protect them and shield them from these things, and now it's just right there in front of their faces. And Homelander obviously has no idea how to be not even a human, but just like a father. He's just, you know, just things that, like, playing catch and things like that. He thinks he's doing a good job, and eventually he's like, all right, well, now it's time to see what you're made of. Let's see if you have any superpowers.
I mean, the scene where he's like, you said you loved me, and his hand is on his shoulder.
You called me dad.
And I was like, he's going to push him.
Yeah, he's going to kill that fucking kid. And the kid shows him that he does have his powers. And that's the thing with Homelander. He doesn't understand why this is, why it was a bad thing to do, because he knows the kid's going to be fine. He probably has x-ray vision, could see his vitals.
It's clear, too. The doctor in the previous season said that he regretted raising Homelander in a lab. So it's very clear that they're trying to do the opposite with this kid, but they're going to the other extreme.
Yeah, it's the,
and when he does say that to Becca at that one point, like, what will the kid think when you tell him you've been lying to him his whole life? That kind of thing? Because he's essentially, like, he's homeschooled, right? He barely has any access to the outside world.
No Burger King.
He knows
Spanish.
And Homelander is real pressed about that.
Dude, when they started speaking Spanish, Homelander's face, I thought that was so funny. It's such a great dig at his bigotry.
Yeah.
And that's an American thing. Don't speak Spanish, speak American. Even when he says in episode one, if you ask somebody in the middle of the desert, who is this? Show him a picture of Homelander. He'd say it in perfect American. So he doesn't even say English. And your point about his mother lying to him, because that's what happened with Homelander. He kills his mother figure because it was the final straw, that final lie. And like you said, it is the other extreme. It's kind of the overbearing mother, and the kid's going to grow up to not be a pussy. That's the toxic masculinity of Homelander. He's just so lost. But he'll grow up to be maybe just a weirdo.
I mean, it seems like they're hoping for the Superman type of deal, like the Clark Kent. He's a do-gooder, right. But not even Clark Kent grew up in that kind of environment.
Well, that's the thing. I guess Vault is trying to create Homelander 2.0 with this child. But they also can't stop Homelander from trying to be his pseudo-father figure. That's also interesting.
They think he'll get bored.
Yes.
Which I wonder if he will.
Well, you see the boredom throughout this character. Even in episode 3, after everyone finds out about Compound V, he shows up to Seven Tower. He's just there to torture Maeve. When he says, "You're the only person I can lean on," and she says, "I feel the same way," you do? Mm-hmm. And then he starts crying.
Yeah, he's a wreck.
Yeah, he's a mess.
Well, he talks about with the son, he's like, you know, it's hard being, like, having no equal. Like, we're different, we're a god. And, you know, obviously he's a despicable character, but like you said, there's something there where you can view him in a way where, yes, he's done awful things, but you can also sympathize with maybe his upbringing and how he didn't have things that a normal child would have, and that's the reason for him being such the way he is.
I think a complete
narcissist, and you times that by infinity when you have these powers.
Right.
It's more like his actions seem to have an explanation. Like, we can understand to an extent what he's doing.
Right.
So, like, watching him do it, it's like, I know why he's doing this, but it's still the wrong thing.
He's not being violent for the sake of being cruel.
Even though sometimes he is, but like... Right.
Well, I mentioned that in the review for episode one, the scene that he has with the Daredevil character. He obviously almost kills this poor kid, but it's to show I'm in charge. It wasn't done out of... It's not like he just walked up to this dude and clapped his eardrums.
Well, it's like a different type of villain or a different type of evil when you compare him to, like, Stormfront, right? Because she has a different motivation, whereas Homelander might have just been broken as a human being. She seems like she knows what she's doing in an acting as in just, like, a sadistic type way, where Homelander maybe more applies evil more practically to, I guess, get what he wants, better himself personally, and show people around him that he's in charge. They're still both awful, but there's like a different type of awfulness to each of those characters.
Yeah, they're both still carrying that ego of fame and of being a child star, because that's my favorite metaphor for the boys. It's fame. But with Homelander, it was a manufactured fame. With Stormfront, it seems that we don't know much about her backstory, but she comes from a place of ultimate privilege. And it's like she knew her whole life. She was born to be this hero.
Yeah.
And you could see that her arrogance manifests in a, I guess, in a more dangerous way, because like you said with Homelander, it is calculated, but it's very personal. Stormfront seems to be more of a big picture type of character.
Yeah, it's also kind of, it's hidden beneath a like a veneer of acceptability, because like in the beginning it's like, ah, she's the feminist, she's the one who's gonna like take down Vought, even though in the beginning you're kind of scared for her because of like what Homelander might do to her.
Yeah, she just bursts in when they're filming that
she's like live streaming on Instagram.
Yeah, well, it's like the difference like Homelander in the plane scene, right? It was a very calculated move, a bad decision morally, but
great
let
point.
That plan go down, and that will allow us to get access into the military. Stormfront, she's just killing in that scene just to do it.
Right. We could just pin this on the terrorists. It just makes it even worse than it is. Civilians died, and that was something that I thought, maybe this isn't appropriate. There's a better way to get the message across that a character holds prejudices.
Yeah, yeah. I think the whole, you know, massacring a building that, you know, the people you see die are all black people. And then
in the aftermath of the cleanup, they're running around. Right. Yeah. The slur against Kenji, Kimiko's brother.
Well, that was like the moment where at first
I wanted her to look in the camera and be like, I'm a racist.
Well, at first it's like she goes in this building, right? She's killing people. And it's kind of, my first reaction was like, obviously she's not what we thought she was.
Right.
And then she says that to Kimiko's brother, and you look back and it's like, oh, okay.
That was intentional.
Yes. So she's not just killing for killing's sake. She has ulterior motives, motivations, and she's just a racist character. And well, this show never like really pulls punches with its villainy. So I guess it kind of fits in with that. And I think it kind of shows something where if someone like this is in a position of power with who doesn't have to take responsibility for any of their actions and know they're going to get away with it, this is something that a person like that would probably do.
Right.
So,
and yeah, I think like people like Stormfront exist. Like there are people who are like have views that are like very socially acceptable and maybe one light, but then hold other views that would seem opposed to the same things that they've been saying before.
And now like those people had superpowers and can act in complete autonomy.
Yeah. And then when you can electrocute people, it's like, what happens then?
And I think it sets up a different type of villain where Homelander, every time he's on screen, I also do feel like there's a bunch of tension, but I'm very interested in like what's going to take place and like what more we're going to get with him. And I kind of want to see that story fully develop. With someone like Stormfront, it's a different type of villain where it's just like, you're not really interested or you don't kind of like, can't relate too much, but it's like it's just a super evil person. And I think it sets up a nice dynamic with her and Kimiko when she has that little stare into the screen where it's like, all right, we got a super a big bad and a person who wants to get revenge. And I think that will be like a satisfying type of moment if that does take place, where she finally gets a revenge on a character like Stormfront, where it's like Homelander, I kind of want to see like a 5-season arc with her. It's like maybe a season or two and you finally get that satisfying, I guess, conclusion to that.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, concerning Homelander, I find it really interesting where he backs down, like in certain confrontations, like where he'll choose to kind of
like
really
Stan
assert
Anger.
Yeah, like that one specifically. It's like in what situations does
he was given the truth in that conversation in such a blunt fashion.
Where he's like, this is a pharmaceutical company and you guys are just sort of the byproduct of that. And he's like, you've destroyed the company.
And he realizes in his head that final line when he says, don't you have a movie premiere to go to? Homelander's, I've been focusing on the wrong thing the entire time. And yeah, and I also found it interesting when San Edgar tries to rally the troops after Compound V goes public and he's like, we need to stop this terrorist. And Homelander says, fuck Vought, we don't need them. And Stormfront at the end of the episode kind of becomes the face of Vought in this new world of fighting supervillains or super terrorists. And she does turn around, gives Homelander that look. So now Homelander is saying, fuck Vought, we don't need them. Someone else comes and takes his position as possibly the face of Vought, and now he's extremely jealous again.
Well, that's what
you wanted to cry there at the end too.
When she was like doing all that, I thought Homelander might be like, oh, I got someone like me here.
Because
you could see like with the rest of the Seven, no one's as, you know, there are some characters that are obviously not morally sound, but no one to that extreme of Homelander. And now someone at that level is, and I thought he might be like, oh, maybe it could be like a evil power couple. But he just is jealous. He's threatened.
Well, we see it with Maeve, where she has that past relationship with her girlfriend, Elena. All these characters seem to have traces of humanity in their past lives, whether it's an individual or where they grew up. Homelander doesn't have any of that. Mm-hmm. And it's so clear. So that's why you see that.
But it's interesting what Maeve said, like that story where they were at the Oscars, I think, and the producer wanted to sit next to her. And then the next day he was found with his body parts all over his office.
Yeah, that's the Tony Soprano sociopathic mindset. This is all mine.
Yeah.
I might not even be dating Maeve at this time, but no one else can have her. That's the mindset of a sociopath. I'll tell you what, the comedy throughout these three episodes, though, I felt has been outstanding. There have been so many moments where I found myself laughing out loud. When they're doing the movie pitch for the Seven, Hans Zimmer, title card, cut to black. Perfect. And that's where you get Stormfront clapping back about the sexist stereotypes in his movie, and he goes, I have two sisters.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was great.
Well, yeah, even like the first two episodes of Stormfront, the introduction where she even views Starlight as like a corporate puppet, right?
Which, like, she is. Starlight for the most part.
Yeah.
Well, in order to like protect herself, that's what she's become.
And obviously she's working behind their back and trying to expose them. But yeah, I thought that was like an interesting dynamic where Stormfront saying all the things that Starlight would kind of say or what she's thinking, and kind of just that facade of Stormfront just hiding who she really is in those moments where it's like you wonder if like they kind of knew who she was. You would think Vought would kind of know everything about every superhero. And I think I said in the first episode, it's like this is someone they probably brought in that people could identify with, millennials, the kind of outspoken brashness and, you know, this person we saw in the first two episodes. I wonder how much they knew about, like, who she actually was.
Well, we do see that all the time in reality where you have a celebrity and they live their entire life and they build up this image. And she has that great line that she says to Starlight, fuck this society for confusing nice with good. Because that's what Vought is doing. They're trying to give off this perception of goodness with their heroes. But obviously, like we've seen, the characters who are more brash and outspoken and a bit more controversial can commit great acts of goodness. You see that with Butcher. You know, he's a character that's constantly going back and forth. He's not necessarily nice, but he does have more goodness in him than other people, than some of these heroes.
Did you guys like the deep stuff?
Oh, I enjoy the deep way more this season.
Yeah.
I think because, once again, the metaphor of fame, he's just dumb. He's just a dumb idiot. And when he's breaking down and saying, my life could have been normal, it reminded me of the dream sequence in The Sopranos Season 6, another Sopranos reference, where they show Tony Soprano just as a normal guy, where he's not necessarily especially good or evil. He's just normal middle-class businessman. And I think that's what the Deep realizes. My life could have just been regular middle-class guy. And, you know, the temptations of fame have made him an objectively bad person. And he still doesn't understand that. He's just so dumb. He doesn't even understand his own problems.
He's like having his Britney moment in, like, Ohio. Maybe getting inducted into a cult. I'm really not sure what's going on there.
Well, somebody commented this on our last video. It's got Scientology vibes.
Yeah.
Talking down against therapy.
Well, I'm talking more of like his gills talking to him.
Yeah.
Felt that was very odd.
And it's like the clear,
so beautiful,
like body image issues he has concerning his gills. And then when he learns that he wasn't born this way, he was made into this, and so therefore his gills were not something he was born with.
Right, and it's
he draws the picture of himself and he ignores the gills entirely, and then it's like, you think he's maybe made progress with this thing, and then Homelander's like, cover those up, they're disgusting.
Yeah, they just know how to, just that one line, man.
That's interesting, too, seeing how the different heroes reacted to this news.
Black Noir crying in the hallway.
Yeah. I think the biggest insight we got was from the Deep and his kind of reaction to it, but that is something where...
Well, another great line is when Archer's like, post-mating Papa John's isn't going to help. He's like, fuck you, you don't know anything about me. Such a dumb thing to say. He's so stupid.
Imagine hooking up with Vought and like injecting your child with this chemical and compound, and he just becomes a fucking Archer.
That's what they said to him. Yeah, I'm a monster too. He's like, shut the fuck up. You shoot arrows.
It's like, do you get like a refund or?
Well, he's
like,
probably very accurate. Yeah.
When I'm signing up, I want like a speedster or like super strength.
Well, we had discussed this, I think, on the spoiler discussion. Can you pick your power? And Teddy was saying that he'd automatically give his kid Compound V. Wouldn't think twice, no matter what the power.
I don't know how much you guys talked about this in your episode one review, but Translucent's funeral.
Fucking hilarious.
I was losing it. The coffin that's empty.
Yeah.
Starlight singing that song.
And it was available for streaming right after.
On Spotify.
Like, what?
It's still funny. It's the perfect cover-up, right? You have the invisible superhero. You don't need a body. He's fucking invisible. And even when they did the montage of his childhood photos where they're holding up the baby, just no arms. The comedy, to me, it's been great. Someone mentioned that they felt that the tone of the show has been a bit dry this season. I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I think it's just darker. I think the stakes have gotten higher, and the characters, we're just learning more about these characters and how fucked up they are. But the comedy, like we mentioned, it's been there. It's kind of fit the tone. It's matching this new and darker tone. Driving that boat into the whale has made me laugh out loud two times, because the Deep, you're seeing him in action, and they're afraid of him. Like, oh, shit, it's Aquaman.
Yeah.
The guy's fucking throwing shark torpedoes at their boat, and then he stands and he does his pose on the whale.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm back.
And then when he does, like, he's like bracing himself. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
The inside of the guts of the whale looked great. It looked very realistic and disgusting.
Huey's just like chilling in there. He's having his breakdown.
I feel so bad for that character.
Yeah.
I love the trauma.
Yeah, the trauma. I mean, you must love that. You're just watching
Yeah, I mean, he's freaking out all season. I'm like, this makes sense. The stuff they've done, I was like, I was also kind of mad at Butcher. Like,
I kind of want them to be like on the same page.
Well, they share that moment where he helps him up after they save him from Homelander, which is also another hilarious line when Homelander says, I was eating pancakes with your wife. He's like, eat this, motherfucker. And he extends the hand. He helps him up. And they even have that look that they share at the end. I would love for them to get back on the same page. I love what Mother's Milk said about he's your canary. He's the one that's going to chirp at you and let you know when you've gone too far. They need each other. Well, and there's a lot of similarities between the both of them. A lot of parallels that they've drawn
season and this one. I think that's what that was. Because you see when Butcher comes and he tells them that, you know, that Becca's alive and they have him. That kind of takes Huey back a little. Then they have, you know, a few moments where Huey saves Kimiko's brother from him shooting, and they punch each other in the face, and Butcher doesn't give him the proper credit for helping taking down Vought. But I think that moment when he risks Becca, like he risks the well-being and, you know, Kimiko's brother is his card to get her free and to get them back together. And he basically risks letting him, and he does get away to save Huey's life. I think that's something where, you know, they didn't say anything to each other, but that look kind of said, okay, thank you, we're good.
And Huey, when he tells them in episode one, this is all I have now, I've lost everything. So that may help ground him, thinking, okay, maybe I have a new family now, it's a fucked up family, but at least it's something. And he mentions that with Starlight, which is definitely going to come back to haunt him, right? Leaving that voicemail. It always happens. Homelander's going to be going through her phone. What's this voicemail, Starlight? That she is his second wind. That he is very much doing this for the possibility of, I guess, spending a life with Starlight. Being with her in a relationship. And they each have their own individual motivations. Frenchie, it stems from him wanting to help Kimiko. Mother's Milk obviously wants to get back to his wife and kid, and Butcher wants to get back to Becca. So they all have their own motivations now that maybe will help ground the team and get them cooperating better.
I have a new theory. I want to bounce it off you guys. So we've seen how Homelander is almost his weakness, you could say, is Mother's Milk.
Oh, God.
So, do you think Mother's Milk will be the one who takes him down?
It's going to be the Martha scene, right? Yeah, Homelander's got him. It's like, wait a minute. I'm Mother's Milk. You're Mother's Milk? I've been looking for you this whole time. No, I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay.
But there does seem to be an obsession here with breast milk.
Yo.
Whenever Homelander sees
sniffing that
milk,
2%.
Yeah. He's like, okay, this is all right.
When
this
he heats up that bottle and like is chugging it, I'm like, bro.
Teddy said he was drinking it like a cat, just with the tongue, scooping it. Ugh. Yeah, no, he's got a lot of
couldn't
issues.
Help himself. The practical thing to do is like take a sip, save it, you know, make it last longer. He couldn't help himself.
When Becca's one pancake and Homelander interrupts his son. Yeah, just one pancake. He's just sitting there with a smile on his face. This is nice. He is out of his mind. I love that set as well. It feels like the old school 1950s house.
Yeah,
all-American house.
Suburbicon.
Yes. Type. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And it's ironic, right, that Homelander sitting there, his cape is a literal American flag, and he's like the out-of-place thing in that scene.
That is a great point, man. You got an eye for this. And I found the dynamic between Kimiko and her brother to be very interesting, obviously because they have the history of being prisoners and having to support each other, developing their own language. And for I wanted Kenji to become part of the boys.
Yeah, I don't know if disappointed is the right word, but I was mad. Not mad. I don't know. I guess I didn't like that he died. I felt
his death was brutal.
It was brutal. It was
the way she snapped
his
hands.
You're watching it happen for so long. But yeah, I really wanted him to join the boys. And I thought the whole, like him and Kimiko, their opposition, like he, like she was taken away and he stayed there. So like the obvious difference that had and their ideologies concerning, because he wasn't wrong. Like the Americans were going to kill him.
Yeah. And they've also created this new society.
And like they did this to him.
Yeah.
And so like removed from the rhetoric of terrorism, he's someone who wants to get revenge, not unlike the boys.
Yeah. It's kind of like they kind of wanted the same thing, but want to go about it a different way. It's kind of like the, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a parallel. Maybe like Magneto, Professor X type, where Professor X is more like more reasonable in his approach and Magneto is just, I want to do it at any cost, right? That's kind of like what I got from Kenji, where they both want to stop Vought, but he doesn't care at what cost. And Kimiko is kind of being with the boys and kind of going about it a different way, can't allow even her own brother to be unleashed in his revenge.
Right. And I think with Kimiko, she was a character that was kind of just with the boys last season. And I think this is a complaint that people made with Django Unchained, that it can be perceived as revenge porn. So Kimiko's purpose now is to get revenge because this character killed her brother. And that gives her more of a motivation because right now, before this, she's just been with the boys. It was fate that she ended up with them. And she has the powers. And Frenchie's nice to her, so she's going to help them.
And also the fact that she has no way of communicating with them. That's kind of like a bad trope. So what I enjoyed was the clear communication she was having with her brother and like how they have their own language. Like I want her to be able to speak more or to be able to express herself more. Like when she's just writing boy, girl over and over and they just have no idea what she's talking about.
Yeah, I think you got a lot more of her character within these moments with her brother. And she had the tremendous scene when she's breaking down. And I think that kind of having someone she can communicate brought a lot out of her performance and just the character itself.
And right. And she was taking out, though.
Even, visually, her facial expressions were, she was so vibrant in a way. And I wanted more of that.
And it's...
We're not going to get any.
We're not.
No, she's going to be completely one-minded for the rest of the season.
Maybe.
And that may hurt the boys.
Yeah.
Because her decision-making may be, who knows? She may be acting on emotion.
Yeah, maybe she does act more like her brother would have. And
well, it seems like he was willing to come around, right?
Yeah.
That final moment that they have when they both tell each other that they love them.
Yeah.
And maybe he's starting to realize, I shouldn't run. Let's turn around. Let's do this the right way.
Well,
and Stormfront electrocutes him.
Well, for her, too, it's like she has the views of that organization of killing their parents and basically destroying what life they had back in Japan, whereas he was able to, I guess, be convinced or converted by them and kind of show them where they're coming from. And I guess that kind of aligned with what he wanted to do to exact revenge. So I guess he was in a way kind of radicalized by that group. And for her, she can't really support that because that's the people who killed her family and destroyed her life. So they're still brothers, and obviously they still have that connection, but that disconnect there is what really drives her to kind of choose the boys over him.
But she's also not willing to give up on him still. Like, she goes after
him.
And I thought that was so interesting, and I wanted to see so much more of it. I wasn't expecting him to die so soon.
I wanted to see him fight with the boys because it would have given them a fair fight against the Seven to have two soups on your team, and of course the minds of all these criminals. I do appreciate him using his powers once, and then
he's able to...
It's a show that's not really going to focus on the superpowers, and they're not going to go into how these powers work, do they have to train them, how powerful is each individual. It kind of just comes and goes. People, if this was another show, if that was Superman instead of Homelander, can he hear them around the corner? Can he use his X-ray vision? Can he smell them? Can he use this power? No, it's a very human interaction. We were hiding, we presented. Oi, cunt! I'm here too! So that's what this show is, and maybe you could have stretched this out for more episodes, but with the 8-episode season, this is what they wanted to establish at the end of episode 3. And we'll have to see how it plays out, but like you said, with Kimiko, she's just going to be silent for the rest of the series, unless Frenchie learns that language. I don't know how he can.
At first I thought maybe it was Japanese sign language, but then they said, right, that it was a language that they specifically created for themselves.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and Frenchie says, can you teach me? And he says, fuck you. Frenchie's great.
I love Frenchie. Frenchie so is the good. Love of my life.
He's such a little rascal.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably, I guess, probably one of the purer boys because, I mean, Huey's just, you know, before this, he worked at, Radio Shack, right?
Well, Frenchie's the character who's...
But he's, in the kind of underworld kind of
he's
black
like Jesse
market
Pinkman.
Type. Yeah. But he's just a sweet guy, and he can relate and protect someone like Kimiko. When he hears Billy say, if it comes to that, I'll neutralize her too, and he's worried about her and cares about her. And that leads him, I think, to care about her brother too, because he cares about Kimiko. So
yeah, and you mentioned that with Huey and Butcher. Butcher making the decision to save Huey. I guess it strengthens his relationship with Frenchie as well, because he made the decision to free her brother. It wasn't about the mission. It was about his friends and his comrades. Mother's Milk, I just want to understand how this man's shirt game remains so fresh and so incredible. These guys are on the run. Where does he get... Wu-Tang, New York Knicks, Public Enemy. What's next week? It's going to be Run DMC calling it right now.
Also, I love that he was building that model house. He was so upset at the thought he wouldn't be able to finish the model house.
Well, I thought he was great in episode 1. I said in the review that he had great presence, and the tension building up was just all in that character. And
the FBI or CIA agent? Did we talk about that?
Oh, her head exploding? Yeah, Susan Rayner.
Yo.
Resting, yeah. Brutal. Kingsman.
Her nose was bleeding and they were like, hey, what's going on there?
I was not expecting that.
I wasn't expecting that either.
You mentioned that they need that connect. They need that somebody who's on the inside. And now the character of Grace comes back in episode 2 and Butcher meets her at the funeral for Susan
Rayner. Edible arrangement.
He says Susan would have fucking loved that. And it's interesting, their relationship as it builds throughout these episodes, where the last time they talk in episode 3, she tells him to be careful. So even though she's been frustrated with Butcher in the scenes, that it seems to keep growing. In season 1, she warns Huey, stay away from this guy. In this episode, in episode 2, she is just cursing him out in this parking lot. But he's desperate, and he tells her that they have Becca, he knows who killed Susan, or he can find out. And that gets her more back on their side. And there's also that scene where she's looking at a magazine, and she asks Butcher, do you know anything about the superhero Liberty? She's got some information scribbled on the back of it, so I don't know what to make of that. I didn't want to look it up, but I'm sure.
I didn't look it up either, but I don't know why. I was like convinced it had something to do with Stormfront. I don't know.
Maybe that was her before she became Stormfront.
Maybe. I don't know. I was just like, the emphasis on that is a bit too much. And at the time, we didn't really know what Stormfront was about. I don't know. It could be literally nothing.
Well, I wonder what their out's going to be, right? Before it was, you bring us the super terrorist and you'll be back with your wife and Mother's Milk can go back to his family and you guys can go back to normal. Now, obviously, Stormfront killed him. It's what's their thing that they can, I guess, obtain or strive for to make a deal with these government figures to get their, I guess.
Well, they keep showing that Congresswoman.
Yeah.
Right? She's always on the TV. She's always taking down Vought. Eventually, that's not something that you show if that character's not going to come into play eventually.
It could just be like kind of like a world-building tool to show opposition within the government. And I think they've shown that with the CIA figures, with the Rayner character. It's like,
maybe that's Liberty.
They're not all working together, you know?
Right.
There is a way to kind of take down Vought within, I guess, within the law. Like, they're not completely untouchable.
Well, it's hard now because, like we saw in the real world, when the terrorists attack, the law becomes...
Yeah.
it can be stretched.
Definitely.
The law is the law until it isn't. So their position at the end of this episode, it's perfectly set up by Stan Edgar. And he has the press conference where he tells them, we don't know about Compound V. It was Madeline Stillwell and a bunch of rogue scientists. But we can't worry about that right now because we have super terrorists on domestic soil. It's the House of Cards move at the end of season 3 where they just allow this terrorist to assassinate a hostage. Fear is it's great for building support.
And I guess with...
And especially when you have the dynamic of superheroes, the whole society is already obsessed with them, but now they're actually doing things. They're actually fighting formidable
and
foes.
And the, focus group testing for super terrorists
Brilliant.
Versus super villains.
Mm-hmm.
Those focus groups are... they say it's difficult to run those focus groups, man. It's hard to get idiots to to answer your questions.
Because it doesn't seem like what Starlight did, right? Because she obviously was the whistleblower to, I guess, what they said, like the New York Times or whatever, for the Compound V. And it seems like they maneuvered, we'll see how public perception, but it seems like they're using the terrorists as a crutch to be like, hey, forget about that. You need us now. So it's almost as like that plan didn't exactly work as well as they intended it to work. Because they seem to be maneuvering around that, but
it seemed like they thought revealing Compound V would be like their gotcha. Like after that, they wouldn't need to do anything. But clearly, that's not how it works.
Yeah, and you kind of know that if it's happening in episode 3 in an 8-episode season, the world is crumbling down. That there is going to be some sort of out. That there's going to be a catch to this. It's Mr. Robot ending the world at the end of season 1. What happens? Well, the world doesn't end.
Yeah.
These people have lawyers, they have tons of money, and they have superheroes. So they're not going to go down without a fight.
Well, I wonder if they explore this at all. But last season we saw with Ezekiel and kind of to market these superheroes as coming from God. Right, it kind of created a sense in this world that a more conservative religious society, because look, how can there not be a God? He brought us these superheroes, and they kind of played that up too, with the Homelander making the speech at that kind of church gathering or whatever, him baptizing people. And so if you take that away, how is that going to change public perception in that sense and how they market their heroes moving forward? Because it was very the old school, Christian values and American ideals.
Yeah, and that's why the 2006 time frame comes into play, because those were big topics we were having back then. George Bush, he used his Christianity to justify every decision he made. And now it seems, we had the moment with Ashley talking about the Daredevil hero, that we're going to market to millennials, and they even make a reference to Hamilton, where the society...
They love Hamilton.
There is a liberal society at play here that they're also catering to. And I thought maybe that this, because there are superheroes, hey, maybe if I'm living in a society with superheroes, I'm like, yeah, of course Homelander came from God.
Yeah.
Where else would he come from? It's a fucking superhero. Yeah, maybe that changes now. And they can go, no, it doesn't change, but they double down on it in a new way. And that's why the character of Alistair, I don't know how he got that information for the Deep, so that the Deep could get there before the Seven. But he seems like a character that he may have superpowers or superhero connections, that he may be well-connected. And this cult, obviously, it's already got Eagle the Archer, so they may have other supes on their roster. And when Stormfront calls him an idiot, he's like, hey, easy on the religious persecution, new girl. He really is just so dumb.
Yeah, like his apology to Starlet.
It's so, like, canned.
Until I've made it right of all the females that I've offended. When Homelander holds him back, it's like, he's still got some work to do with the ladies.
Yeah.
Is Homelander saying that?
They're all so messed up. Well, Homelander, when he acts as their dad figure, and he goes in for the hug with the Deep... They really look up to that, man. What do you guys think about the character of A-Train in these first three episodes? He obviously has his return in episode two. I thought that was a great surprise for Starlight.
I was actually surprised. I thought it was going to be just one of those, like, which in general, I thought the press junket scene was very good. Like, showing it how they keep getting asked the same questions over and over and over. And then there's this actual surprise of A-Train showing up. I was like, what is he gonna do?
Starlight too, yeah. Just,
like,
kills her.
Everyone
right
is shook. I was like, because they showed in the beginning he was in that coma, and now he's awake, and he's clearly, like, he was trying to basically blow up her spot, but then she was like, actually, I don't care if I die. So, you know.
Yeah, and they have that confrontation during the after party where she asks him, have you told anyone? And he just walks away. So he's kind of trying to see how this could benefit him.
For a minute, I thought maybe he had, like, memory loss, just because they're sort of, like, edging around the question so much until he's eventually, like, so they know that you let your traitor boyfriend escape. And you're like, oh, no, he definitely remembers and he's pissed.
Yeah, when I saw them together in the season two trailers, I thought that was the first thing that came to mind, memory loss, that he just doesn't remember the confrontation. So Starlight would be safe, but he doesn't out her. I mean, she's kind of maneuvering with Gecko to keep that Compound V safe.
Yeah.
The whole Gecko thing is super weird.
Yeah, it was very weird. I feel like Nash would be into that. Nash would be a good Gecko, big Gecko guy. And he has that line to her when it's reported that Compound V has been given to these soups and Vault stock prices is falling. And he says that we're going to lose everything. You don't value money because you grew up with it. And once again, going back to the idea of fame and how it can change someone's life for the better, but also make them worse off in terms of their... personal
or, like,
life.
The things people will do to keep it.
Right.
Like, that's the reason he started taking Compound V in the first place, to win his races, because if he wasn't the fastest, then, like, what was the point?
I always wonder with these characters who's going to turn face, and I think the most obvious candidate is Maeve, because while we haven't seen...
She kind of already has...
But put it into actions.
Yeah.
Rather than just opening up to Elena, if she can be the one that stands against Homelander.
Yeah, so far it's kind of seemed like she's been, you know, not in lockstep with all the things morally wrong happening within the Seven, but she obviously doesn't agree with them. But she hasn't taken any action against it as of yet. Like, we saw Translucent and with Homelander, she's obviously horrified about what he did, but she can't do anything about it because Homelander is the strongest person and would kill her or kill people that she cares about. So it's kind of like a hostage situation where there's nothing really anyone can do unless something like Starlight, where you have to kind of take a different back road into bringing down the corporation rather than confronting Homelander head on.
Do you think A-Train turns face? Or do you think that he's eventually just going to die?
Well, like, a lot of
those
these...
heart problems, yeah, aren't going away. He even has the moment in the tunnels where he can barely hold himself up, and Homelander knows. He definitely knows that this guy's been up to something.
He's murdered, like, and even with the Deep, too, what he's done and his...
Well, that scene with when she tells him, well, that's what gets him to keep quiet. She says, yeah, I'll expose what you did to Popclaw. So, she had 30 needles in her arm?
It's always, like, a difficult, I guess, challenge to kind of make characters who do bad things sympathetic or have a face turn, like the Deep or A-Train. One's a murderer, one has sexually assaulted countless women. I don't know if they would do a complete 180 where it's like, oh yeah, now we're rooting for these people. But there are little things you can like, okay, they're, you know, they regret what they did, but they still did it and they're still bad, but it's...
Yeah, yeah. They have that one decision at the end. It's a Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
Shows up to help Rey. It's not, and I don't think defeating the boys, defeating Vought, defeating the Seven comes down to just brute strength. It is going to be a clever plan devised by Billy and the boys. It's going to be unexpected. And I think that's what this show does so well. It is so unpredictable, where the world is falling in episode 3, and then it doesn't. Vought is still standing strong, so you're thinking, what happens now? And I think that's where the character of Grace will come into play, because she seems to be a bit more well-connected than Rainer, even though she's not necessarily working as an agent. And I think we're going to see more teamwork between Billy and Huey. The big two.
It's really clear that we haven't seen the full scope of the world or even the big picture. Like, what they're doing is so limited in comparison to what Vought itself is doing. Like they said, they're a pharmaceutical company. What is, I guess, going on, you know, beyond the superheroes?
I wonder if there will be, like, an equal. Like, if Starlight wanted to unleash all her powers, would she be able to hang with, like, a Homelander? Or if there's a hero out there, that kind of creates a different dynamic where... Like, I wonder, like, or if, like... If, like, Maeve, A-Train, like, if the rest of the Seven teamed up, and like, would they
That's
be
what
able
I was
to,
wondering. The face turn him? If yeah. A-Train and Maeve and Starlight yeah. and Kimiko are all going at Homelander. Somebody made a point on a Reddit post that after season one that I remember so well. We see A-Train literally pulling a freight train with chains, and he is terrified of Homelander. We're seeing someone whose main power is super speed, but he obviously also has super strength, and he won't dare step to Homelander. So what's that man's max potential?
What?
And that would be cool to see for us superhero fans.
Yeah.
It's kind of old school. Who's going to beat who?
Because I read an article like him versus Superman, and it was like...
Superman would turn him into a can of soup.
I know, but one of the things he had going and against him was like, what I found interesting, it's like his capacity for evil and not shying away could give an advantage. But the thing was too, like most bullies, like when they're matched and they find an equal or they're like put to the test, it's like he could carry her away or he would do something.
It's like Voldemort always being afraid of Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Because he just knew he was more powerful.
So I feel like that, like his whole life thinking that he's a god and not top and no
just
one can match
checked.
Him. And
it's All Might?
Yeah.
All Might Homelander would be the better fight, I think, in terms of strength.
Yeah. So I would just like to see like what would his reaction be if there is an equal or someone that can pose a threat to him.
Well, you always love a good humbling, right?
Mm-hmm.
When it's the all-powerful god and he just gets humbled.
I mean, in a way, I wonder if Stormfront would be able to do anything, because she is checking him in a way, but it also, it's more like he is offended because a woman is daring. I do believe part of it is the fact that Stormfront is a woman and she's clearly not listening to him. Like, she's someone who's defying him in ways that he's not used to people defying him, especially the other heroes on the Seven. And he's insecure about that. Like, he has a mother complex, as we've seen. So...
Really? I might have missed that.
Yeah, it's all very interesting.
And just his general, like, his views. Like, he's a clear misogynist. He's racist. He's basically everything under the sun.
And he feels like he's just taking up these traits to, like I said, just to be a bully. That he's not someone who thinks back and...
I think it all relates to, like, he believes he's a god and that he has no equal. So therefore, every belief that would imply that no one is his equal, he will co-opt.
Yes. Where if he walked by the daredevil hero on the street, I don't think he thinks twice about this individual. Blonde
yeah.
hero. Great. But when you position this character as, what, like I said, Ashley's trying to overstep... Now I'm going to degrade you and this character, and I'm going to hit for all of his insecurities. When he says you would allow a cripple to be on the Seven, because he just knows that's something mean to say.
Yeah, he's like...
It's the same...
But I think he does genuinely believe that to a degree.
No, he does. And that's the thing. He's capable of going to these places, but...
It's like a view like where he's at the top of the food chain, and anything below him, he has no sympathy or doesn't care about, and basically treats them like insects. So he's just, I don't know, he's fucked up, man.
The only thing he cares about the deep, he doesn't care about his sexual assault, he doesn't care that he's going crazy, he just cares that his gill is showing.
Yeah.
To me, that's disgusting. He's just being mean. He just knows how to be mean. He knows what buttons to push.
He still has that like childlike sensibility. Like when Edgar is basically like chastising him, it's like he's like a kid
who's fuming.
Yeah.
He's pouting.
He's like petulant, yeah, almost.
I mean, like I said, in episode 3, he basically cries twice. He cries when Maeve says that she cares about him. He has no idea how to handle that. And then he almost cries at the end when Stormfront's getting all the attention. He's a child. Yeah, and like I mentioned, the season is so unpredictable, but I'm looking forward to seeing Butcher and the boys get back on track. What plans are they going to devise? Because whenever you think they're out, Butcher just has, he's got his trump card. He's got something up his sleeve. And with the heroes as well, this new dynamic, this new world that Vought is now operating in. It seems like a world that's very precarious and just waiting to be ripped apart. So we'll see who's left standing after Vought, because those superheroes aren't going away. You bankrupt Vought, you can't bankrupt a superhero. You know, you can't just seize that asset.
Yeah.
So I'm very much looking forward to the rest of the season.
I do like the weekly. Are you guys a fan of that?
Yeah.
Or would you rather? I saw people are actually like review bombing on Amazon.
I know.
It's so ridiculous.
Such
that, is that what
brats.
They're doing? I told one of my friends the other day, I was like, you should watch The Boys. And he looked it up on Amazon. He was like, oh, it has like terrible reviews.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, really?
So on IMDb, it has a good user rating. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has a good user rating. But the main complaint.
Amazon's got 3 out of 5 stars.
2.5.
2.5 now.
Like, the main complaint is that, like, why isn't it all available? And it's like, I can understand, like, preferring the binge model, but it's like.
I kind of like having something to look forward to every week.
But it's like, even if they like didn't, I'm like, I'm not going to like say it's a bad show because of that.
I'm frustrated by the binge. I would never, ever comment on a show and base the quality of that show on whether or not it came out all at once or weekly.
Well, yeah. I mean, just like, I don't know, when a whole season drops and everyone's like, hey, have you watched this yet? And I'm like, no.
Well, it's a very like sporadic.
It seems overwhelming.
Like,
then I'm like, now I have to watch, like, I'm like, oh, this is 10 hours of my life.
So this is like, you talk about it, everyone's kind of on the same schedule, and you can discuss it and look forward to and make theories. You know, I'm not making theories like, oh, I wonder how, what they're going to do to try to bring down the Sevens. Like, oh, no, I'll probably know in like 10 hours.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it opens up more conversation.
Definitely.
Week to week, and it's better for us. We had this whole plan. We're going to do weekly reviews and spoiler discussions, and then they drop the first 3. They're like, change of plans. It's like Ashley running up to Stan, like, did you see the news? Did you see the news? But we will be back for the rest of the season. Like we said, we're going to be doing weekly reviews and spoiler discussions. Next week, we'll have Teddy on, because Teddy is also watching, and you know him. He's got his thoughts. Well, he's going to open up his kid for a baptism and Compound V. One shot. And yes, like I said, we will be back. So I hope you enjoyed this video. I hope you're watching, liking, subscribing, sharing, all that good stuff. And yeah, The Boys, season 2. Well, would you look at that? It's finally over. Hey guys, Beau Oliver here for one final send-off. Now, before I beg you guys to like and share this video, I'd like to thank our very special Patreon pledgers. We are very proud of the community we've been able to build here at NerdTube, and it would not have been possible without our Patreon supporters. You guys are the true MVPs of this channel. Everything I've said, you keep the fridge full, you keep the lights on. There aren't enough words to thank you guys, but we'll do it anyway. Thank you. And we have a few videos coming up that have been suggested to us by Patreon pledgers. My Hero Academia, Neon Genesis Evangelion, and Full Metal Alchemist will be reviewed by Marissa and yours truly, and Castlevania, which will be reviewed by Marissa and Aaron. And if you'd like to consider donating to our Patreon page, you can visit patreon.com/nerdsoup and check out some of the rewards we offer to our listeners. And really, we'd like to thank everyone who takes the time out of their day to watch our videos. Patreon pledger or not, your support is what keeps us motivated to keep giving the world our opinions on movies and TV shows and video games and pop culture, even though no one asked for it. We're still here, we're still yapping, and we hope you continue to join us. I'm Beau Oliver, and I support this message.